As we heard this morning, we're going to start a new series of sermons and of some of the lesser known characters of the New Testament. And so we're looking at John Mark this morning. We're going to be looking at Tabitha, Philip the deacon, Lydia, Philip the apostle, and Felix. So some of those you will recognize, some of them you won't. But we just hope that through this series that we'll not only learn, but we'll be inspired by the Spirit of God to live out his purposes in our lives. So the first of these is Mark, sometimes known as John Mark or even Marcus. He must have been a young man when the heat was turned up on the church at Jerusalem when Stephen was stoned to death and James was killed by Herod. The first time he's mentioned is after Peter's arrest and then his miraculous release. And so if we could have Acts chapter 12, verse 12 up, and I'll read this, but it's just useful for you to follow. This is Peter, when this had dawned on him, he went to the house of Mary, the mother of John, also called Mark, where many people had gathered and were praying. Now it certainly seems that this home was a common place for believers to meet and to pray, and in John Mark's family home. And so we can assume quite rightly that John Mark was brought up in a godly atmosphere, and certainly he would have known important people going and coming and going, and Peter would have been a complete surprise at that moment, having miraculously escaped from prison. The next mention of John Mark has him on the mission field with Paul and Barnabas. And again, we read in verse 25, when Barnabas and Saul had finished their mission, they returned from Jerusalem, taking with them John, also called Mark. Now, it's very clear that actually Mark was the cousin of Barnabas. And so there was a close family connection there. And Barnabas, I'm sure, took Mark under his wing at times and helped him and encouraged him and supported him and taught him as well as they went around together. Unfortunately, this first mission trip was short-lived, although we're not quite sure why. Mark abruptly left Paul and Barnabas and went back home. And we see that Paul... Acts 13:13. From Paphos, Paul and his companions sailed to Perga in Pamphylia, where John left them to return to Jerusalem. I wonder why he did that. It seems a little bit odd. And there don't seem to be particularly good reasons for that, as we shall see in a moment. It could be reasons. One of them could have been he was homesick. He'd got a good family and he was very comfortable there, and it was home, and perhaps that was a reason. Perhaps it was that actually Paul and Barnabas kept changing their plans, and he was unsettled and didn't really feel. Maybe he was unsettled with actually Paul taking the leading role, as seems to be the case. And so that sort of sense of change of leadership, or, you know, Paul being more important in leadership than Barnabas, and that created tensions for him. We don't really know, we can surmise, but it was certainly not a positive reason for him going home. The ramifications of his early departure come up a few chapters later in Acts when Paul and Barnabas start to plan their next mission, and just a little bit more of that in a moment. Paul and Barnabas, after Paul leaves them, continue their first missionary journey and then return to Jerusalem to discuss the wonderful work that had been happening among the Gentiles who were being converted. You read the story. I haven't got time to go into it at all, but wonderful things were happening. People were being saved, people were being filled with the Spirit, and these were the Gentiles. I mean, this was almost, for the people, you know, for the Jews in Jerusalem, this is almost not on. You know, it was almost like, God, you can't do this. You know, we're the people of God. We're the ones that Christ came to save. And how dare you almost do this? And so Paul and Barnabas come home and they meet with a large group of leaders in Jerusalem to discuss this and to clear up the matter. There were people on this council that felt that the Gentile converts should become Jews. They should be converted to Judaism, and there was a mechanism for doing that in the Jewish faith. But as this was discussed, Paul and Barnabas and others said, no, that's not right. These people have been converted, they have been saved, and they are Gentiles. They're not Jews. And so this discussion went on, and eventually the issue was settled in Paul's favour, and a group of leaders were sent off to clear up that particular matter with those around, those Gentiles, to actually settle them, because they were being really upset by what was being said. But Paul and Barnabas stayed in Jerusalem to teach and to preach, and of course Mark was there. And after a while, Paul and Barnabas decided to go on their next mission. Let's just read Acts 15, starting at verse 36. Sometime later, Paul said to Barnabas, let's go back and visit the believers in all the towns where we preach the word of the Lord and see how they're doing. Barnabas wanted to take John, also called Mark, with them. But Paul did not think it wise to take him, because he had deserted them in Pamphylia and had not continued with them in the work. They had such a sharp disagreement that they parted company. Barnabas took Mark and sailed for Cyprus, but Paul chose Silas and left, commended by the believers to the grace of the Lord. He went through Syria and Cilicia, strengthening the churches. What do you know? Disagreements do happen. And they happen in church. They happen with church leaders. They happen with members of the congregation. They happen in families. They happen all over the place, don't they? Even though here were supposedly the height of experienced and spiritual leaders. Paul and Barnabas strongly disagreed over John Mark. And it broke up their ministry team. How sad that it does happen. It happened then and it happens now. But, you know, I just want to say that although this happened, and we've actually alluded this in various ways, that although things go wrong, there is still God. And God is sovereign. And God is in control. And, you know, even though we mess up in our lives, he is still there. He never leaves us or forsakes us. He is the faithful one, as we've already thought about. So Paul teamed up with Silas, and Barnabas took John Mark. And it's interesting that whilst Paul wrote a large portion of the New Testament, it's pretty evident from his reading that Mark actually got back into, if you like, the club. I don't mean that in a nasty way, but, you know, got back together with them. And he must have, Paul had got his concerns about John Mark, and I think I probably would have done, you know, right in the middle of a mission, and then somebody decides who's there in the lead, oh, I'm going back home, can't cope. So Paul must have had his concerns when Barnabas said, let's go and take John Mark with us. You know, I'm sure Mark didn't realise that his going back home would have caused such a uproar and such a division. Whatever the reason was, he just felt he had to get out of the situation. And sometimes we might feel that. Sometimes pressure in life, pressure in the work of the church can just overwhelm us. And sometimes we can say, I think it's time to quit. It's time to have a rest almost. And sometimes even when we're in a leadership role and there are others around us, sometimes we can enter into conflicts. Church leaders, elders, deacons can find themselves in conflicts with one another for all sorts of reasons. Paul saw Mark And he was obviously quite young, relatively young and inexperienced, and he couldn't cope. And you know, I was just thinking about this, and in churches so often we look at youngsters and maybe we encourage them to do things and they perhaps don't do it quite as we would anticipate, or they make mistakes, or they actually say, I don't know, I've done it once or twice, I can't do it again. And that sticks in our minds. And certainly when I was a youngster in a couple of churches that I was in, there was this sense of, he's done something, but actually wasn't quite what we wanted or wasn't quite what we expected. And that sticks in their minds. And there's this almost sense of not letting them have a second chance. What is wonderful about Paul is that he actually does give Mark a second chance, as we'll see later on. But, you know, as a fellowship, let's encourage the youngsters to get involved. Let's encourage them to get in some kinds of leadership. And I think as a church, we need to be constantly aware of younger men and women in the fellowship who have gifts, who have talents, and to encourage them to get involved. And they may get it wrong, but so what? We need to encourage them. If they get it wrong, we need to get around them, support them, and then eventually, hopefully, can bring them through into something even greater years ahead. So, it would appear that Paul and John Mark would never be able to work together again. But God often has a different plan and changes circumstances and hearts. Colossians 4:10 says this: "My fellow prisoner, Aristarchus, that's right, sends his greetings, as does Mark, the cousin of Barnabas." Now, this is later on, and here we see that Mark is actually with, or at least a friend of Paul's, he's with Paul and sending his greetings to the church. Two of the letters Paul wrote whilst he was in prison in Rhodes spoke of his friendship with John Mark. He called him a comfort and a fellow worker. Near the end of his life, he told Timothy that he wanted to see John Mark. So let's just have a look at a couple of those verses. Philemon 24 to 25. "Mark, Aristarchus, Demas, and Luke, my fellow workers." So here was Mark, now a fellow worker with Paul again. And then in 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 11, "Only Luke is with me, but get the Mark and bring him with you, for he is profitable to me for the ministry." Paul had a great change of heart. He saw in Mark not only a friend, but also not only a companion, but someone who was able to help him in his work for the kingdom later on. We might make mistakes, we might get things wrong, but God never gives up on us. Paul called him Marcus, actually, in the letters. Now, John Mark was most likely from a family with a Jewish mother and a Roman father. That's why it's his mother mentioned in Acts 12 instead of father. You need to look at Acts 12, but the mother is deemed, as a sense, as important as the father, which is very unusual, certainly in Jewish environment. But John was his Jewish name. Mark came from his father. Years had passed by the time Paul wrote his letters, and Paul had spent most of that time ministering to the Gentiles, so the use of the name Mark or Marcus isn't that unusual. Remember, Paul himself no longer went by the name Saul after surrendering to that God had called him to do. The Bible doesn't give us details on how John Mark went from being someone Paul didn't want to take on a missionary trip to someone he considered profitable to his ministry. The details really aren't important. The important thing is that no matter how bad we mess up things up, God can restore us and uses for his purposes. The last mention of John Mark is in 1 Peter 5, verse 13. Peter calls him his son. So the church, we got that verse, it doesn't matter. The church that is in at Babylon, elected together with you, saluteth you, and so doth Marcus, my son. Peter calling Marcus his son. Interesting, Paul and Peter are together, probably in Rome. And it's probably there that Mark wrote his gospel. And it is John Mark who actually wrote Mark. And it's interesting that actually through that gospel, the spread of the gospel from Rome actually spread out, and that the book of Mark, the gospel of Mark, was used in a great way in that process. God used John Mark despite his failures. He even entrusted him with writing the book of Mark. God gave the young man who gave up too soon a second chance. When we fail, when we fall short, we can get up and try again. In fact, we should get up and try again. God can take the mess we've made and use it for good. Elijah messed up, as we thought of this morning. And realised that that's what we were going to think about. But he messed up. He turned around and got it right. But if you look at the story of Elijah, he didn't fulfil all of that God told him to. And it was Elisha that ended up doing what God had told Elijah. And it's important that sometimes, even though we right at the end we mess things up, God is still sovereign. And God still fulfills his purposes. And sometimes I think we can get hung up on all this thing about God's leading and should I have done this or should I do that? And I just want to say, we need to relax a bit sometimes when we're thinking about God's will and purpose. And it was interesting that in the journeys, Paul's journeys, there was this decisions made. They didn't sit down and sort of say, Lord, what should we do next? They actually just looked at the situation and made decisions and went and did what the actual essence of preaching the gospel wherever they went. And if God had got an alternative, he actually stopped them and reorganized their journey, as it were. But we need to just relax and let's do that which we know that God has called us to do. Maybe use the gifts that we've got in the environment, in this church, in a home group, in a youth group, or wherever it might be. Let's use that God has given us. We might mess up, but so what? So what? God's in control. And he can bring things round. He brought things round in terms of Mark and used Mark in a wonderful way. Mark messed up. If it was homesickness, then he certainly didn't do that of the true disciple, did he? Because Jesus said, leave everything and follow me. If it was a change of leadership from Barnabas to Saul, he surely was not a man who was in submission to others. If it was due to a change of direction in ministry, he showed he was weak and unreliable. Yet God turned the whole thing on its head. God is faithful. God is the God of new beginnings, of turning things round, of using things for his glory, for his purpose. How wonderful that God chose Mark to write the second gospel, which became a fast-spreading document through the whole area, starting in Rome, where Mark would have been with Peter. How wonderful that Paul showed his kindness, trust, forgiveness, showed the very heart of God and entrusted Mark into his inner circle. How remarkable is the turnaround from failure to becoming an influential person in the development of the early church through the gospel he wrote. Church splits are so sad and usually go down with, usually are because of disagreements of theology or church practice. power struggles and pure personality clashes. We need to be aware that these things can develop in churches. One of the things I constantly pray as we're moving towards the church build, we're going to find things stressful. There are going to be things that we don't like. Decisions that may be made that we kind of, oh no. You might find yourself at odds with somebody. Let's be aware that these things can happen. Let's also be aware that Satan can come into those just everyday things and make them something far worse. Let's be careful that we actually stand strong together. Stand strong in the faith and in the gospel. Stand strong in the very fact that we are the people of God. We are the family of God. And God has called us here to this place to actually fulfill his purposes. And when we get upset, when we get maybe not happy with what's happening, let's remember that actually God and his work is more important than our preferences, our priorities, our agendas. And let's be clear that there are no growing divisions among us. Let's keep together. So easy to walk away. And you will know of people that have walked away from this fellowship for all sorts of reasons. And whenever that happens, I get very sad. Because actually most of the reasons can be worked out if actually people are prepared to work at it and to look at, and to work it through. But these things happen, and God is sovereign. So when those things do happen, he will build his church, and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. And throughout the world, we can see all sorts of crazy things happening, and we might despair, particularly crazy things happening in churches. Maybe in terms of theology, maybe in terms of violence, maybe not done through the churches, but through those opposing Christians. We can see all sorts of things, but God is faithful. God will not let his church be destroyed. God will not let his people be destroyed. And the wonderful thing is, you know, we've got a glorious inheritance, a wonderful inheritance prepared for us. Let's just pull some of these things together then. Mistakes in leadership relationships, they happen. Mistakes in personal relationships, they happen, don't they? In church, at home, school, work, wherever, it happens. But let's remember that actually we need to trust in God. If we're biffed with others because they've made mistakes, let's take it to God. Let's not stay miffed. Let's not stay unhappy, because that in itself can turn to bitterness, and bitterness is what actually destroys churches and individuals. Maybe that we're miffed at decisions that others have made. Maybe the elders. somebody in a group, somebody in a house group, somebody in your family, I don't know. But let's not be miffed at decisions that others made and reject them. If I came to you, I think all of us would have to say that we've made mistakes. We've made mistakes in decisions that we've made. We've made mistakes in our relationships with others. We've made mistakes, actually, just in terms of decisions that have been made that we really don't agree with. It may be that we've got miffed because people have done things to us or said things. So easy to get upset with what people say, isn't it? And we've been looking not so long ago from Proverbs about the tongue. And that whole, the words can actually go deep into us, and we don't even recognize it. But words can really hurt us. just want to share this as a personal thing that I won't go into the details of what was said, but over a period of time, some things were really that were said to me that actually really hurt. And I was aware of people talking about me behind my back. Now, you can get paranoid about these things, and so it wasn't that, but I was just hearing these things. And it really got to me. It really went deep into my psyche, if you like, deep into my heart. And I knew that this was affecting me. And I couldn't do anything about it. I couldn't go and say to these people, oh, you know, you're saying all these things and you've hurt me. We can't do that. So what do we do? Well, I actually went, was at a conference, Christian conference, and I went forward for prayer. And as I went forward for prayer, I offered all this to the Lord. And you know what? He took it right from the depth of my being and he released me from all of that stuff. But we have to take it to the Lord. If we don't, it gets stuck down there and it affects us. It affects us in our relationships and our relationship with one another, our relationships with God. Let's not get stuck with these hurts, these things that people say, or these things people do to us. Let's give it out to God. Let him release us from these things. And the wonderful thing is that actually God in Christ, through the Spirit, actually does bring this kind of healing, doesn't he? Whatever it is that we're stuck with in our hearts, in our minds, in our spirits, he can release it. Anyway, how wonderful that God gives new beginnings. Sometimes, even with the people that we've messed up or they've messed us up. And it's sometimes hard, isn't it, when somebody really has offended us or hurt us or, you know, we've just got it all wrong, to get back to them, to get back into a relationship with them. But how wonderful it is when that happens. Because it actually shows the wonderful grace of God and the mercy of God, the forgiveness of God, the reconciliation that actually shows something to the outside world as well. How wonderful that God brings reconciliation where there has been division. I wonder if the musicians could take their place. I just want to say this, that we do mess up we do mess up, but when we do, when we fall, then actually God lifts us up when we fall down. I love the phrase, he turns our weaknesses into his opportunities. If you've failed, if you feel you've been weak and useless, actually God can use you. And he turns those things into his opportunities. And we're going to sing the song, Faithful One, which we heard earlier, but we're going to sing it together. And it talks about us, God being faithful to us. No matter what, he is faithful to us. But he also is the one who lifts us up when we fall down. Let's be those who are always on our feet, not in the dumps. Those moving forward, serving God. Moving together as an army. Completely united together in one heart, one mind, and one purpose.